everybody, and welcome to the Total Soccer Show. I'm Taylor Rockwell. No Daryl Grove on today's episode. Today's episode was recorded yesterday, Saturday, July 4th. Instead of Daryl Grove, I talked to Jeremy Ibobasi of the Portland Timbers. He joined me from a hotel room in Orlando, and we talked about many, many different things, including what it's like to be in the bubble, about the Black Players Coalition, and about what he would like to see in terms of change in the United States going forward. Many topics discussed, so I will stop introducing and instead say, Jeremy, how is that hotel room so far?
You know, it's the hotel room itself is comfortable. The atmosphere is a little bit unnerving, I would say. You hear a little bit of rumors here and there about what is possibly not going perfectly to plan. Mm-hmm. But again, I think it's about everyone doing their own individual responsibility and hoping that that element of luck falls our way as well. So that we can do what we're put here to do, mm-hmm. and that is play the game and play it in a healthy way.
And what has been the process like since you've been down there? Is it a lot of sort of quarantine time in your room? Is there much like social interaction, and how much training is going on as well?
I got down here last night, and immediately before we got to our rooms, we got tested, and then from the moment we got tested, we came up and straight into quarantine. So I haven't been out of my room in the last 12, 15 hours until our test results come back. And from that moment, we have a little bit more mobility. We're allowed to trade, I believe. But again, it's a process, and we have to take it seriously because we've seen some unnerving stuff, as I said.
Mm-hmm. I haven't had to take a test yet. From what I understand, it is not a very pleasant experience. What is it like, and is it as uncomfortable as I've heard?
I would say it's all about the proctor. I remember the first few times I was hearing rumors, and some of my friends were like, it's the worst thing you'll ever do. I'm like, come on, that's a little dramatic. And then I got to my first test, so I got mentally prepared for just excruciating pain. Then I got to my first test, and it was very, very smooth. The lady at Providence walked me through it and was very gentle. And I was like, I can do this every day. And then, unfortunately, I learned the harsh reality eventually.
Oh, no.
Not all of them were like that. But yeah, it's manageable.
All right.
Not to be dramatic, it's very manageable.
And then with the quarantine that you're undergoing right now, like, how are you staying busy? How are you fighting boredom?
Well, luckily, I've only been in quarantine here for about 15 hours, and most of that was during my sleeping time.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, I'm just watching Premier League and hoping that the tests come back quickly.
Yeah.
You know, we could have as soon as a less than 24-hour turnaround with the test results, and once that's the case and we get on a regular testing schedule, we, as I said, we have that freedom of movement a little bit more.
Well, I'm excited to talk a bit to you about like when games are actually happening. But before then, I wanted to talk to you about the Black Players Coalition. You're on the board of that organization, which has more than 70 MLS athletes announced on Juneteenth of this year. What has been the reaction since you all went public from fans, from media, from MLS officials?
Yeah, it's been humbling, honestly, to see the outpour of support. I think we all came together knowing that we believed in our cause, that it was time for us to stop fighting these battles individually and to put together our platforms. But to see the warm reception, you know, from fans, from former players, especially from the league and organizations all around the country, it's been, as I said, humbling. And knowing that we're not in this fight alone, because any push for equity takes the large majority of society. So we look forward to keeping the positive reception going and to holding those accountable, making sure that they understand that it's not just about supporting us when we announce, but it's about supporting our initiatives. And we're still figuring out exactly how that process is going to go and how we want to put together our bold ideas into play. But ultimately, they might require some fundamental realigning of our institutions, be it within the soccer community or in our residential community. And we expect the same level of support, even if it comes with some healthy skepticism. we do expect that support.
And how is the process in of determining how you want to move forward? Like, how are you all undertaking that? Because from my understanding, this started off as like a 9-player group chat, I think, on Instagram. Like, how are you all sort of organizing and communicating, especially during these times?
Yeah, I think the communication part is becoming both one of our biggest challenges, but also one of our biggest strong suits. We have been organized in large part through Quincy AmeriCorps, who has taken the lead and making sure that we're able to meet on a consistent basis with the whole player pool, and also the rest of the executive board taking the initiative of creating notes of meetings, recording calls when necessary, just making sure that everyone had a debrief of whatever was going on. The organization has been moving at lightning speed since Juneteenth, and that's a testament to the reception that we got, that we got the kind of attention that we have received, and that has allowed us to make progressive strides into just formalizing the way that we want our organization to operate. And I still think that that's going to be a work in progress. Hopefully over the next few weeks, we can really be solidified and start to introduce some initiatives, but it as I said, it's a work in progress, and we're just excited that the momentum is there and that there's a lot to capitalize on.
And then in terms of the goals of the organization, I know you listed three of them in the introductory press release, but I wanted to maybe let our listeners know about what the goals are and then what changes you think could happen most readily and which ones you think will take much longer.
Yeah, I think we want to highlight the voice of a Black player in MLS. Black players have felt stifled in the past. Have felt like their voices haven't been listened to, or worse, that they've been listened to in a performative way where no action comes of it. So uniting behind this platform and making people engage with our voices is very important. And then addressing the lack of diversity within Major League Soccer in our front offices and our coaching staff, that's something that's really important to us. Speaking to former players and listening to their experiences trying to get front office jobs has been a little bit alarming. We've always known that it was the case, but to see such qualified players struggle to get in the door, it doesn't bode well for our own futures if that's the path that we seek. So we want to make sure that's addressed. And then we want to talk about our own individual markets as well, especially. And this is where I believe it'll take the longest. I mean, the community initiatives and the change we want to see, whether we're talking about education, which is something that the group is very passionate about. We're talking about addressing the inequities within the education system. And normally that's something that the government is supposed to be taking charge of, local and state governments, but frankly, we've seen an absence of leadership in that regard. And with that void, we hope that private organizations can partner with us and the nonprofits that have been doing the work and make sure that, you know, our Black youth have opportunities to succeed within the classroom, especially given the challenges that COVID-19 have presented, making sure that the tech gap isn't something that's further expanding the achievement gap. So we have long-term plans on that front, and who we partner with is going to be very important as to how we undertake that. But in the short term, I think we can really dial in on the lack of diversity within our front offices. I know the GMs and the CSOs are very eager to address that. We've had an open dialogue with them, and they understand that it hasn't been good enough, and we look forward to working with them. As I said, that's the only way it's going to come down, but that's not something that's going to take a lot of money or a lot of fundraising to get across. So that's something that we can get working on immediately.
A couple follow-ups there. Initially, you said Black players have felt stifled, and I'm wondering, is that from like a systematic thing, or is that more like what you talked about in your Medium piece of people just being like, hey, like lighten up, like let's focus on soccer, let's not focus on these heavier issues?
A little bit of both. For me individually, I would say the latter especially. Mm-hmm. But also when we talk about Black voices, Black personality, there are very few players in this league, Black players in this league, who would say that they have not been mischaracterized as having an attitude, having personality problems, to just generalize, because of the way that we have acted in certain scenarios. The leash on a Black player and the margin of error in how we behave is non-existent. If we lash out once, if we make a negative comment, it characterizes our whole personality. And that happens at the youth level, that happens in college, that happens in professional soccer. So that's something that we want to highlight, the beauty of our personality, the culture, that's really important to us. And we hope that that translates into, you know, our diverse personality being respected, as opposed to forcing us to continue to wear this shield every time we step into professional settings, where we can't be ourselves, where we just have to be very neutral, where if we hear something we don't like, something that's racially charged, we just hold our tongues. This is all important to us. We want to be a voice for Black players in Major League Soccer that they feel comfortable coming to when there are these problems as well.
When you feel like if you personally are getting mischaracterized as like, oh, being like difficult to work with, he's got an attitude, whatever, like, how do you handle that? And how frustrating is that? Because I imagine if your actions are being mischaracterized and then sort of put out into the public, that would be a very, I don't know, that would make me pretty furious. And I'm wondering how you are able to kind of handle that and move forward.
Yeah, I consider myself lucky because I was able to learn from the older players as soon as I came in, and also just having an older brother and knowing his experiences within the world, the real world. I always knew that any misstep would be would put me into the angry Black man category. And so because of that, again, I tried my best to avoid any potential action that could be spun in that regard. And that's not to say that other people who do the same thing don't still get mischaracterized, but I've been lucky to especially in recent years, avoid that stigma. But what that does, even in being able to avoid that stigma, is that it builds up a load of stress, and that stress is taken out when no one sees it, because again, it can't be shown publicly. And so when you're alone, it boils up and everyone reacts to it differently, but it's not a healthy place to be at all. And that's why we believe so strongly in making sure that as Black players are understood, because again, as I said, there will be very few players who haven't gone through what I've just described of stifling it completely to the point where, yeah, maybe you might avoid the characterization, but it takes a toll on you when no one's looking. Or just being bounced around from team to team because, yeah, we're tough to work with. And I can see the rage in people when they're in a setting that they feel comfortable being themselves, knowing that they're not going to be judged.
How much of that feeling, of that frustration, then factors into the creation of the Black Players Coalition? Because I can imagine a scenario in which you all are sort of, as you go from 9 people to 70 people, it being a lot of like, yeah, I've experienced that. Oh, you've experienced that? Well, then we should sort of unite so that we don't just get the like lone angry Black man narrative. It becomes a sort of unit that can sort of work together. Is that a sort of motivating factor there?
100%. There's strength in numbers when we talk about this kind of criticism from the outside, and finding almost solace in the solidarity amongst people that look like you is something that, you know, reminds you that you are who you are and that you're proud of that and that you're not alone. So that's what we're about. We're about protecting each other and supporting each other. And we look forward to putting that together and marketing everything we have to offer as people, because oftentimes, again, we're reduced to, you know, our athletic ability. Literally on the field, we're reduced to just being physical specimen, they're athletes. And then personality wise, again, we're reduced to, oh, he just plays sports. Oh, he's just a professional athlete. You know, he's not a smart business owner, or he's not a politically astute human. So we want to put that platform together to really highlight who we are as people.
Much more still to come from my conversation with Jeremy Ibobisi. But first, I wanted to let you know that this episode of the Total Soccer Show is brought to you by Policy Genius. Shopping for life insurance can raise a lot of questions, like how much coverage do you need? Which insurance company is the best for you? How much should it even cost? And at a time when it's more important than ever to have life insurance, the pandemic is making it a little more complicated to shop for it than ever. That's where Policy Genius can help. As a life insurance marketplace backed by a team of experts, Policy Genius is keeping track of all the changes in the market so you don't have to. They'll find the right amount of coverage at the best possible price without the headache. Nobody needs a headache. And with Policy Genius, you don't even have to worry about that. They will compare quotes from top life insurance companies in one place. It takes just a few minutes to compare quotes from the top insurers to find your best price. This doesn't just save you legwork. You could save up to $1,500 or more a year by using Policy Genius to compare life insurance policies. So if you need life insurance but you're not sure where to start, head to policygenius.com. Policy Genius will find you the best rate and handle the process completely. They'll get you and your family protected and hopefully give you one less thing to worry about. So try it today. That's policygenius.com. Thank you very much to Policy Genius for sponsoring this episode. Now back to Jeremy. And then when you mentioned addressing the inequities in the education system, in terms of the long-term work of the organization, how much would you like to see that on the field in terms of education and getting more players involved versus how much would you like to see it in classrooms and kind of moving away from the field, being more societal and like trying to fix things that exist in our culture, in our society as they exist right now?
Yeah, I don't think that's my decision to make. we have a busy board and an equally eager player pool. So I think it's about me personally. I would like to see both equally, both with equal time devoted to them, because this world is greater than our sport. But ultimately, our binding factor is that we play soccer together. Mm-hmm. And we want to make it a better environment for the youth coming up. Another pillar that I didn't get to it was that we want to improve the connection of the sport within the Black community, and invest soccer resources within the Black community as well. Ultimately, it's going to be about who's interested in what, you know, and being able to divide our resources and keep passionate voices where they're passionate. That's how we're going to establish in which direction we go. And when we talk about from an educational level, we want to influence the education system and show Black kids, Black youth that, you know, the society cares about the inequitable system that they currently have to succeed under. Mm-hmm. But we also want to go about educating our peers as well on the history of this nation and why there has to be an urgency to overhaul some of the regulations and institutions that have contributed to the further entrenchment of systemic racism. So I've mentioned this a couple of times, but strategic partnerships are going to be super important from the nonprofit side, because it would be naive to think that we have all the answers or that we can find all the answers through individuals that we work with. It's going to be about a lot of highlighting of those nonprofits. I like Equal Justice Initiative a lot. I think they've done a lot of narrative rewriting as far as the Civil War goes. You know, there's been a rush to romanticize the Confederacy and their cause and trying to make sure that it wasn't one that would upset the public. And we've seen so many of their monuments erected long after the Civil War, frankly, during Jim Crow, in order to remind Black people of their place in society. So Equal Justice Initiative is maybe an important one. And then I also want to highlight a youth group out of New York City called Teens Take Charge, who are fighting systemic racism and the inequities within the New York City school system, which is as segregated as pre-Brown eras, I believe. So the people don't recognize those numbers, and people don't recognize that, yeah, we've made a lot of progress, but ultimately through that progress, we've seen immense backlash from people who would consider themselves very progressive, very open-minded. And so we've seen the systems revert to times that people would claim to be ashamed of. So we need to highlight these nonprofits doing the pivotal work.
Since you mentioned the monuments, I'd like to talk about like your thoughts on what progress looks like, specifically about symbolic change versus systematic change. So we record this show in Richmond, Virginia, the former capital of the Confederacy. They started taking down the monuments this week. And like that was, for me growing up in Richmond, that was the thing I never thought was going to happen. So in that moment, it's this very exciting thing. It feels historic. It feels like progress. But then there is that idea that like if you're taking down the symbols but not changing the structure that led to those symbols being in place, are you actually doing that much? And are you just sort of making it more comfortable, which is a thing I think you covered pretty well in your Medium piece. So I'm wondering if you see the removal of those types of symbols as a sign of things are moving forward, or are we prioritizing the value of those symbols too much?
You can't remove the symbols and call it a day and claim that that you know you've created such substantial progress that you can take a break from addressing the inequities of the system. If it's between one or the other, then I would take the system changes over the monuments. But at the end of the day as well, we have to remember that symbols are powerful as well, especially for those who've grown up and have seen those symbols representing everything about their discrimination. You know, some of the older generation Black Americans who identify with those symbols in a stronger sense than maybe some of us younger ones, and especially me as an immigrant, might. We have to respect the power of those symbols, and so take them down. But that's not a path to stop addressing systemic racism. That's as simple as it gets. The monument should have been taken down a long time ago. The fact that they're just happening now in the wake of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery is a problem to me. And I don't want to be too critical because, again, people progress on their own time. But this is the easiest climate to take that down. Mm-hmm. So, again, I don't want to put too much value on something that shouldn't require that much thought.
So, in that Medium post, it's not meant for your comfort, which I think is one of your pinned tweets, so people should read that if they haven't already. You sort of go into how we've been here before with Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, Michael Brown, Philando Castile, countless others. From my perspective, and emphasizing that it's my perspective, like this does feel like a bigger movement than we've seen before in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. Does this feel different to you, or do you feel like we are still at risk of everybody posting their thoughts on social media and then considering everything resolved?
There is a little bit of difference here for me. I think the international attention has been one of the bigger differences. The international movements, I think Black Americans have this connection to the Black people all over the world, to the entire diaspora, whether we're talking about in Africa, the continent, or you know, in some of these Western countries that have a lot of similar practices, frankly. So the solidarity worldwide is something that has given me a little bit of light in this difficult time. But ultimately, I still stand by, you know, the cynic in that piece and the idea that at some point we will return to full normalcy. I've seen the beginning steps. And listen, I don't expect everyone to post on social media for the rest of their lives. But I know when people have put something completely to bed and won't address it until the next time that they're forced to. And when people have just transitioned their social media platforms into something that's more sustainable, something that maybe is more behind the scenes, you know, I've seen a lot of quotes about there being different lanes to activism, and I couldn't agree with that more. But I also believe that to the people who have been on the wrong side of these issues for decades, to the people who have vilified the Trayvon Martins, the Tamir Rices, the Sandra Bland, the countless others, for me, those people don't have a choice. They don't get to pick their lane of activism. They need to let the world know exactly how they're changing their views, how they're unlearning their history that has perpetuated such harmful statements and ultimately harmful advocacy to the Black community. These people need to stay in the public light, and they need to understand that, you know, they've got a lot of work to do to gain our trust. Mm-hmm. Progress is a difficult thing. You know, it doesn't happen on its own. And the reason why we've seen a lot of local governments take action is because of how strong, you know, the movements were at the ground level. But the second that those unsustainable protests, demonstrations fade away, is the second that those elected leaders who maybe want to take the easy way out feel that they don't have to continue to engage with the demands of the protesters. So my hope is that the activist groups leading it on the ground find a good way to transition the day-to-day demonstrations with public-facing campaigns that let these politicians know that, you know, a couple of days of progress or a couple of weeks, a couple of legislative bills aren't enough. You know, that, again, this is going to take at times overhaul, changing a lot within the systems that we've come to accept as normal. But, you know, just because I saw a great quote on Twitter a few years ago, so I can't remember exactly, but it said, just because we can't imagine a world in which the systems that we live by don't exist doesn't mean that we should stop pushing to get towards that world. And that's how I would epitomize these moments.
So lots of teams, pro teams, amateur teams, what have you, posted on social media. Some have not said very much since. And in terms of working towards that goal, working towards that sort of dream, how do you think teams could be better in their outreach to the Black community? Because I think from my interactions with teams, from my experiences with teams, I think they tend to take a sort of uniform approach of like, we're going to do this initiative to get more people into the games, or we're going to put out you know, free soccer balls into the community. But I think to an earlier point you were making, that like if your board is entirely white, then that uniform approach is generally going to be geared towards a white community. And I'm wondering if you have ideas or thoughts on how you think teams could go about better incorporating the Black community to get them more engaged in soccer and then to continue the dialogue from there.
Yeah, I think there's a lot in that question, which is good. First of all, you mentioned if the board is fully white, you're going to have certain decisions made that aren't reflecting of what needs to be done. And that's why we talk about getting Black people, people of color, diverse voices across all spectrum into positions of power, so that we're not making those mistakes of overlooking our communities, whichever they might be. The result that we've seen from organizations with lack of diverse voices is one of show up to this place, take a picture, and then don't come back until the next picture. And that's something that's unacceptable. Something that, you know, Black players have had to hold their tongues on, you know, since they've been in the league. But now we feel very comfortable in saying that can't be a thing. That in and of itself, it is one of the fundamental reasons why we don't have change. It's a little bit insulting, too, frankly, that the Black community is a photo op to pretend like organizations are involved in addressing the inequities in society. But again, that's why we're here. We're here to hold people accountable and create sustainable initiatives. And so for me, that looks like we would like to see courts and fields built public courts and fields built in these communities. And we want to see the clubs show up on a consistent basis. I've spoken to, you know, some people within my organization about, you know, what a community program would look like on an education level and with Timber's involvement on the soccer level. You know, we're in very informal talks, but the point is that the ideas are being bounced around and consistency is the theme. I remember sitting down with my community relations vice president during Black History Month, and one of the first things I told her, I think it might have been a few months before when they were planning, one of the first things I told her was, I don't want this to be about 1 month. This isn't a month. Black history is American history. So how can we create a platform that continues year round? And I think we had created a good starting plan, but through COVID-19, which frankly would have been an opportunity to stand by that platform, given that the disparities the Black community was facing, Black and Brown communities were facing, were devastating. We were faced with the natural business distraction of our league being uprooted, but we're finding our place back to that platform. So that's important. And then the first part of that question as well was talking about kind of these statements being made. The statements are a start, but you know, you have your statements that range from, you know, Ben and Jerry's, who, you know, have been very aggressive on their social media and very specific in what they see as the problem. And then I can't think of one off the top of my head, but you've had infinite other organizations that have denounced,
yeah,
in the most general of terms. And so we see that. We understand that that means that they don't want to take a stance, and that doesn't give them the social media credit that they're looking for. So I just want to put that on the record too.
Yeah, I think I think it's the Charlotte Independence owners' statement was something like, "I'm sorry if my comments were misconstrued as being offensive," or like it was not at all a concession or an admission that they were going to change. It was more of a like, "I'm sorry you were offended." So I think, yeah, you kind of have those two very disparate reactions, and it can probably be difficult for people to know exactly who is genuine and who is not. But I guess I can take solace in buying Ben and Jerry's, and maybe that's a way to cope with the sort of stress of the situation as well. Maybe you could do that as well if you're in quarantine. I don't know if you're allowed Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Yeah, I think as long as we're in quarantine and not leaving our room, I think people are pretty flexible with what we're eating in moderation. But to your point, I would say, to not knowing who's genuine and who's not, it's about who's trying to follow that up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is setting systems and processes in place so that 2 years from now, when I guarantee the public will have forgotten, who is going to be happy to be doing the work? You know, who is going to make it such an ingrained mission of their organization that when it's no longer socially expedient, politically expedient, economically expedient, especially the latter, because a lot of the initiatives we're talking about, you know, might not necessarily see direct returns. Who's going to still be doing that work, and who's planning for that right now? That's how I would analyze it. And that's how we as an organization are trying to prepare our partners to make sure that, again, they're here for the long haul, because we're going to be here for the long haul. We don't have a choice. You know, a lot of the players within our coalition have kids, and it doesn't take someone having kids or someone feeling close to the situation to demand change. But unfortunately, in this country, especially with non-Black people, that's the only way that, you know, people actually understand what's going on.
And I'm assuming that, like, in terms of the long-term fight, the long-term struggle, the Black Players Coalition will be front and center. If people want to sort of read more about what you all are doing or stay up to date as things develop, is there a way that they can do that? Or for now, is it sort of listening to the individual players who are involved, following them on social media, and sort of learning from there?
I think right now the best way is to follow the players who are involved on social media, whether you're talking about the executive board who's you know, involved on a more consistent basis, or just some of the players that in your individual markets who might be doing some stuff specific to that market. I think that those are two very distinct voices that are under the same platform. Eventually, we are going to have a website, and we are going to have a more a less sporadic social media presence as a group. This is all part of our organization building. And so you will be able to see exactly who we are, what we're doing, how we want to put pressure on the public to join. Ultimately, as I said, any mission, any fight against systemic racism has been won because we've had unrelenting coalitions across race, across age, across gender spectrum. That's what it's about. So we look forward to keeping the public tuned in on what we're doing, and we look forward to their support as well.
All right. Well, Jeremy Ebobasi, I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today. I know you've got a lot of quarantining still to go, but I hope it goes well, and I hope the restart goes as well as it can. But I really appreciate you taking the time to chat with me today.
Appreciate it. Thank you for having me. You know, it's important to have these platforms to discuss these difficult issues, but we're all in this together.